Okay, Scott Miller, here you are back with us, and I think we've solved our technical problems, and welcome you back. And the question was left at, catch us up, please, for the past 16 years.
16 years and 16 seconds. I left you guys into your studio on maybe the hottest day in Vermont that happened last century. And that was before we knew global warming was a hoax, so it was really scary at that time. Now it's just sort of surprising when it happened. I went to the Czech Republic with a bunch of students for a semester. Had a wonderful life-transforming sort of event there, and came back, and I think I pretty much devoted myself to electroacoustic music over the past 16 years. There's a handful of things that I've done that are acoustic, but really a big part of what I do with sound, whether I'm composing or performing or collaborating with people, is going to involve electronic sound somehow, usually real-time electronic sound.
So we just listened to Whispering Beast. Now, what's the full title of that, and why?
Well, that's the working title right now.
Okay.
It's what you heard is a structured improvisation with cellist and improviser Emily Girard-Charest. She was actually a student in this master's program at the Estonian Academy of Music and Theater last year, where I was a Fulbright scholar. And we came together and put together this piece. She wanted to do something that involved ecosystemic programming, which is a big part of what I've been doing with using Kima over the past 15 years.
Okay, now we're going to have two sets of definitions there. Let's start with Kima, which is going to be the easier one.
Kima is a software and hardware sound design, real-time musical gift from Carlos Galletti and Kurt Abel.
K-Y-N-A.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is Greek for the word for wave. And so that's the connection there. And in fact, the Kima International Sound Symposium was just in Bozeman, Montana, 2 weeks ago. And it's there were a lot of Kima all in one place.
And now, wait, what was the rest of what you said there? What did you mean? Please help.
Ecosystemic. Okay, so I learned this from Agostino Di Scipio. This approach to programming that he was using the term ecosystemic, and it pops up in different ways. And essentially, it comes down to this: I treat the performance space as a sonic ecosystem, and I'm programming in Kima to use microphones to listen to the behavior of sound and then to map that data in a lot of different ways to either generate new sound or process the sound in the room. And it creates this very, I guess I call it now, I like the term situational. You know, it's not site-specific, but it's unique to every space, every performance, every performer. And so what you just heard was this surround sound electronic environment that Emily was sitting in the middle of with her cello, and there were microphones in there, so she was in a sense playing this space, and we recorded it.
Playing the space. Can you sort of outline a little bit more about what playing the space means? Now, clearly she's playing an instrument. That's how we'd understand it. But what is playing the space?
So all of a sudden she becomes this agent in the sonic ecosystem whenever she makes sound. And in Whispering Beast, it actually begins with her holding her breath and then breathing. And it ends that way as well. And just the breathing alone changes the sonic ecosystem, and the sounds that I've programmed in Whispering Beast, they're actually processing and the sound of the space and putting it back into the space. That changes it, and so it responds. And the title, or at least the working title, comes from the fact that it sounds to me, when I'm in the middle of it, like there's this whispering sort of surrounding you in the space. And then if you just leave it to its own devices, it does manage to sort of work itself up and explode into a sort of this big sonic event and then balance back into mm-hmm. to whispering. Mm-hmm. So in a way, what you just heard was a collaboration between Emily, the improviser on the cello, and the space that she performed that in. Does that make sense?
Yeah, Scott, this is Eve Baglarian here.
And, hi, Eve.
Hi. I'm really interested in this idea. I've been sort of thinking about... I'm trying to understand what you're saying in relation, say, to the Alvin Lucier piece, I Am Sitting in a Room, where you get the resonation of the room repeatedly. Maybe you can describe the piece for our listeners who might not know that piece.
And so, this absolutely is informed by Lucier's work, which involves making a recording of a performance in a room, which is going to have all these sort of the sonic characteristics or fingerprint of that room, and then playing that back in the room and recording it again. And by doing this multiple times, each iteration, the room, sort of the fingerprint becomes harder and harder and sort of starts to erase the things that don't resonate in that room and emphasize and amplify the things that do resonate in the room. And in the end, what you do end up with is this kind of unique, I would say, sonic picture of the space. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's something that you can have at the end. You can listen to this like artifact of it, which in a way is what you just did with the recording that you played of mine, is a document of a thing that happened, of a moment in time that it'll never happen again. Mm-hmm. And so that's frankly one of the things that is very exciting to me about it, is that it's in a way, it's essential that these things be experienced live, because that's the one time they really do happen.
Yeah.
How can someone hear this in the high resolution version that would really, really help them grasp the detail of it? Where can we find it? We obviously played something here on the radio, but it's because of radio compression and everything else, it's kind of hard to hear it in any kind of detail. Can they get some copy from you, or is there a place they can download something in a high resolution version?
Actually, Emily is planning to release a CD this fall that will include this track and one other that we did together and during that recording session in Tallinn, and so it's probably the best thing would be on your website to simply put her name, Emily Giroux-Charest, which I can email you. So
please, yes, absolutely.
That'll be the easiest way to track it down. I think it's a late October release is the plan.
Fantastic. You know, one of the great things about sort of spatial pieces is the uniqueness of the experience. Eve jumped in with this very same question I was about to ask you about the Lucier sitting in a room, because you can't redo the Lucier piece in another space either. It becomes unique and
different piece.
Yeah, and everything becomes a different piece. The playing the space very much like playing a composition that has been transformed. It's an amazing experience. I recommend our listeners look it up. Yeah.
I think it's a very physical kind of thing that doesn't necessarily translate very well in a recorded medium.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're there, you can sense that it's happening, that it's sort of unfolding around you, and that you are actually a part of it. And that's just very exciting to me.
In a way, though, what I'm thinking about is the idea that a piece like this, like your piece, when it's played back mm-hmm. in another environment, is actually in a duet with the environment that it's being played back in, and that that's not an inconsiderable interest. I mean, that is, in a sense, what you've done is fixed the sonic aspects of the space in which you did the performance. And when I hear the piece, in my bedroom, I'm sort of in duet with that space. And that's true of every recording, but there's something sort of intensified about it with what you're doing, yeah?
Sure. You know, every room and every speaker is a filter, right? And so that's one of the other things that I like about this, is that instead of fighting the sonic signature of a space and or being disappointed about how things behave, I'm embracing it.
Right.
Or allowing performers to embrace it and to simply make music with the situation that they happen to actually be in, rather than some ideal that maybe is never going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Scott Miller, thanks so much for joining us again after 16 years here on Calvos and Damian. It's been a great pleasure. It's a pleasure the first time, and a pleasure once again to hear the transformation of your work over a decade and a half.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And I'm looking forward to hearing the rest of the anniversary special. So far, so good.
So far, so good. Thanks so much, Scott. We'll talk to you in another 15 years.
All right. Yeah, I got it on my calendar.
Bye.
Bye, Scott.
Bye now.
Meanwhile, WGDR Plainfield, WGDH Hardwick.
And Scott, Sean Hickey is our next guest, but he's on a plane. He emailed me earlier today to say he was going to be in the air at the very time that we were supposed to interview him.
Should that be a detriment? Why can't he just call on the ship-to-shore radio?
It's probably Delta, you know.
Ship to shore?
Despise musicians?
The SS Delta?
The SS Delta, that's yeah. What it is, yes. So what we're going to do is we're going to play a piece that he sent us just for this occasion. A very short piece, 4-minute piece called Tango Grotesco.
Thank you.
That was Tango Grotesco by our guest in flight, Sean Hickey. He was on the show with us, again, like everyone, quite a few years ago. And he was beginning to win prizes back then.
Unlike us.
Well, we don't ever apply for prizes, which is why we don't win them. Should we start doing that?
I thought there's a trick then.
Yeah,
I didn't realize people just didn't come and give you gifts and prizes.
That's what the tip jar's for.
Ah, excellent.
Yeah, exactly. So look, we're because we're sort of running off schedule here. We were going to interview Beth Griffith and John McGuire,
Who were here just half an hour ago.
Yes, Beth is performing John's piece a cappella tonight, and we wanted to talk to them a little bit about it, about how to prepare for it and so forth. But we're gonna, since they've gone outside to walk in the beautiful Vermont air, they're not here. So instead, what we're going to do is play a couple of movements of a string quartet by Eric Nielsen called Glimpses of Azure. And we'll listen a little bit of that, because he's going to be here later in the show to talk about his opera production.
Yeah, we won't have to play this again then.
No. We'll get it over with.
Yes,
now.
Of course.
So let's hear a little bit of Eric Nielsen's Glimpses of Azure.
Thank you.
Music by Eric Nielsen, our guest coming up in just a little while here on Calvis and Damien. He's actually scheduled to arrive this afternoon at about 2:45.
And we know how good our schedule this afternoon has been already.
Oh, what was that beep? Beep was the air conditioning going off again. And so because Beth Griffith and John McGuire are taking in the wonders of the Vermont air, instead we're going to talk to David Morneau, who is going to perform tonight in our concert. Our concert is 7:30 to 10 p.m. tonight here at the studios of WGDR, and also it will be online at the same time, so you can listen either way. We'd prefer you here, of course, because it's so much more fun to have people in the studio. So he's going to do something a little bit unusual, some things that we actually haven't heard anybody do yet. So David Morneau, welcome to Calvis and Damien, and tell us a little bit about what you're going to do tonight.
Well, thank you for bringing me in as the understudy for the guests.
Yes. Can you sing?
I cannot sing, but what I can do, what I am doing tonight is I have two vintage Nintendo Game Boys, both for the original model that was released in 1989. And installed in these, there is a loop sequencer called Nano Loop that was built by a gentleman named Oliver Wittchau from Germany. And basically, so it's a cartridge just like any game. You plug it in the back of the Game Boy, and it has a loop sequencer. You can create some loops and then sequence the loops together. And it creates music using the sound chip in the original Game Boy. So it's this sort of lovely, old-fashioned 8-bit sound.
Lovely, old-fashioned 8-bit sound.
That sounds like us.
Yeah, I know. It's just, it's so disturbing to realize that when you were on the cutting edge of computer technology, you were using lovely, old-fashioned
8-bit sound.
Well, it wasn't old-fashioned then, right? It was cutting-edge 8-bit
sound. Yeah, it was, yeah. Go ahead, insult us. Go ahead, make us feel bad. We'll just die here on the air, than normal.
There's an interest, there's a real interest, there's a whole scene around using the Game Boy, in fact, but there's a real interest, I think, because there's a nostalgia for some of these sounds, at least in the community that does a lot of this music, because it reminds them of playing these games from years ago. And so it's fun to take that and to try and do something a little more high-minded. And so what I've done is I've taken this 1980s technology to revive a form from the 1890s, which is, of course, the tone poem. And the tone poem, I think, is a bit of a dubious proposition because, there are two problems with it, I think. One is that, you know, so a tone poem is a piece of music, piece of instrumental music, which is attempting to tell a story or convey a poem or paint a picture. And the idea, I think, that one of the problems with this is that it would require that everybody listening and the composer have the same sense about which sounds mean which things, either emotionally or in terms of like narrative action. And maybe it was different then, but now for sure there's so much music and everyone has such different ideas, it's hard to sort of create a piece where you can guarantee that a particular sound will evoke in the listener's mind a particular emotion or a particular sense of the story.
Yeah, because we've had, you know, a tradition of when you hear a string tremolo, you think tension that goes all the way back to Il Combattimento di Tancredi e Clorinda. And that was that Monteverdi that wrote that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and other sort of things are built into cultures, like a dropping minor second being associated with pathos or woe or sadness. But these small elements are no longer the dominant elements of how we understand music now. So
for sure.
So back to you.
And then the other problem, of course, is that everybody must know the story which you're telling in order to get the sense of the piece. So the story that I've set is actually one of my favorite parts of being on this show in 2008 was the essay that David wrote to open the show.
What?
Yes.
Oh.
If you haven't experienced listening to the Calvis and Damien show, you should go online and you should just listen. And they open all the shows with these wonderful essays that are just, I don't know how to just, they're great. They're very silly and irreverent, and they're the perfect kind of counterpoint to the composers. And I loved.
Our personal idiocy is always welcome.
Well, not like that. I think there's a sense with some composers to take themselves a little too seriously, and I like the fact that there's this sense of, like, we can just be funny and be real people around, you know, this thing that we do. So that's the story that I'm creating a tone poem out of. And to solve this second problem of everyone not knowing the story, I've invited David to read the original essay tonight while I'm performing on the Game Boys in the studio.
Whew. Boy, that's... I'm under pressure.
I know, and I'm looking forward to our rehearsal later.
Yeah, it was supposed to have been earlier, but because of schedules, ha! We also have a CD of yours that's programmed to play something if you want to suggest something, or unless you want to talk more about Game Boy piece.
No, I think that's enough about the Game Boy piece. You can tune in tonight, and...
Where are you on the program, as if that makes any matter?
I believe I'm scheduled to be on at 9:40.
Yeah, you're wrapping up our concert tonight, so it better be doggone good there, Morneau.
It better be good, or hopefully everyone will be sleeping by then.
We will, just...
Yes, thanks a lot.
So the CD that I'm holding here is something that I created, actually, since I was on your show. We will listen to the first track. This is, it's called Love Songs. It's a set of songs for which each one pairs one of Shakespeare's sonnets with a piece of contemporary poetry. This one, the poem is by Austin Alexis, and this is sung by Katie Crawford.
Is there some sound manipulation? How did you make this piece?
It's... My idea, the thing I was going for, was to try and combine elements of pop songs with elements of art songs. And so you will hear some of those. It's pretty straightforward in terms of, like, how the technology was used.
Okay, are we ready? I have to push the button. Seems like it.
Draw. line moves to the midpoint of the canvas. My crayon inches there also from the opposite direction. I'd say the whole orbis lives in a mystical perfume of paint, pastels, prints, creativity. Nothing should stop.
From David Morneau's Love Songs, which is a CD, you remember that technology,
oh, yeah.
Two Etched Marks, performed by Catherine Crawford and David Morneau on keyboards and sequencing. He was just here in the studio and now he's gone, just like lots
just
of other
like
guests.
Just like that, but he will be back tonight
for
a concert, 7:30 to 10. Tune back in or come down to the studio at WGDR. Okay, and if things are going well, we should be speaking right now to Anne LaBerge. If things are going well, we should be speaking right now with Anne LaBerge. Anne?
You would have to qualify it with, if things are going well.
Yeah, I shouldn't have said that. I should have gone right to the things are going well. I'm not hearing Anne, so I'm going to give her a shout on her regular phone line and see if we can reach her that way.
And I have something in the meantime for you.
Which is, yes, please do.
This program is preempting Box Full of Blues, community support for which is provided by Peak Hydroponic Garden Supplies, located at 20 School Street, by the Blinking Light in Plainfield. Caring, lighting, nutrients, caring, shouldn't there be a Y in there?
Yes, there should be.
Okay, carrying, lighting, nutrients, organics, and grow mediums. More information is available at 454-8000 or online at peakhydroponicgardensupplies.co. What's that letter before N? M.
That's lots of them.
Oh, lots of them. Right there are. Sorry about that.
This is a logical work there. Oh. Let's see if we can get Anne back. Anne.
Hi.
Good. We got you back. So happy that you're back with us here. Anne LaBerge, who's been a friend for many, many years, long before we had any Calvos and Damien contact. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Good. Catch us up. We're talking to you at your home in Amsterdam.
Right. So yeah. Who's in the studio right now?
Well, we had Calvos and Damien, and then across on the other microphones, we have Robert Bonato, and we have Eve Baglarian.
Oh, hi, Eve.
Hey, how you doing?
See, she gets the highs.
Yes, right. The rest of us,
those
nothing.
Guys, get rid of those guys.
Who cares?
Oh, it's Eve.
I don't actually know Robert, but I know Calvos and Damien.
Well, you're lucky.
How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
It's a beautiful day here in Plainfield, Vermont.
Well, it's a beautiful day here in Amsterdam, believe it or not.
That's wonderful news. Yeah.
Well, that wraps up this interview with Anne LaBerge. Thank you very much. Nice to have that weather forecast.
Catch us up.
No, actually, one of the things I'd love for you to catch us up on is a project you started a couple of years ago, which was so interesting and different, called the Shackle Stick.
Right. And what would you like me to say?
Well, the background to it, how it came about, and of course, the beautiful design of it and what it does.
Robert von Hoymann and I play in a electroacoustic duo. We've been doing that for quite a few years now. And we, because our sector is pretty clean, is pretty small, just as far as instrumentalists that play with laptoppers, we came up with the idea of putting out a USB stick instead, because the USB stick could include video and PDA.
And we're losing you on this end. So hold that thought, and we're going to call you on your regular phone. We're talking to Anne LaBerge in Amsterdam, and now and again, things go a little bit awry, so we're gonna try and catch her back up in just a second here on her regular phone.
Skype people are going to sue us. Skype.
Put that thing on pause. No, that computer over there. Because every time...
The Skype people are going to sue us.
The number is in suspect.
Oh dear.
Uh-oh.
Oh dear.
Voicemail and LaBerge.
Okay, well, let's try this again. Try one more time. And.
This is actually excellent advertising for Skype.
It is.
What it really feels like to use Skype. The
number is in suspect. Your door is haggled.
Well, we'll try her one more time on Skype and see how that goes. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear.
In the meantime, I could be playing CD 2, track 4.
Well, let's just connect one more time and see how this goes.
One more time.
Answer this one.
This is actually a live piece, a Skype piece.
We should make it a live piece. Well, it could be a very, very live piece. Anne, are you back?
You know what?
What?
Whoa, leave us dangling.
Oh. You're doing this deliberately.
Shall we talk about the castanet again?
That was like, that really was performance art. You know what?
Okay. We're still not catching you on your end. You simply have gone silent. It's as if you're there, but not speaking with us. So we're going to play the piece that you've sent us.
Thank you.